On this week's episode, we are heading back to 1962, where the Interval Act may remind you of a certain British comedic icon. Get ready as song number 17 representing Zavattaland takes to the stage. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 6. My name is Alexander. Before we begin today's show, I'd like to take this time to shout out a podcast that I was partially featured on, the Mates in Space podcast, which is hosted by Jack Eaton and Justin MacArthur. Opened the podcast to Q&As, and I submitted a question regarding a moon colony entering the Eurovision Song Contest. Jack Eaton, who is the former co-host of the Douze Point podcast, clearly has a Eurovision background, and being on a space podcast, I thought it would be the perfect opportunity to bring both of his worlds together, bring the space and the Eurovision world kind of together. And so I submitted the question, and they were very kind enough to feature their question on their show. So be sure to check out the podcast to hear what the response is to a moon colony entering the Eurovision Song Contest. They actually had some quite good points to make, and I thought it was a fantastic question to listen to, and I thought it was very well done. So be sure to check them out. I absolutely love listening to Mates in Space. Their chemistry is amazing. And I'll leave a link to the podcast in the show notes on the ESC 101 podcast website. The Interval Act is usually a performance of some kind to tie the audience over while the voting takes place. It would be a little awkward if the show was silent between the last song and the period of waiting for the votes to be cast, so the audience both in the venue and those at home usually get to be entertained by an artist or a group of people. Some contests have very simple interval acts like music or a film, and others have a variety of artistic performances. This particular interval act that we're going to be taking a look at is by no means dull, even for the 1960s. The Interval Act of 1962 was a comedic performance by Achille Zavatta. Before we take a look at the performance, let's learn a little bit more about the man himself. Born Alfonso Alessandro Achille Zavatta, he was born on May 6, 1915 in Nagoulet, Tunisia. The Zavatta family, who's Italian in origin, has been in the circus business for over 200 years, with Achille's great-great-grandfather Domenico Zavatta, 1794 to 1857, starting the family circus tradition, and Achille's great-grandfather Giovanni Antonio Zavatta founding the Circo Zavatta in 1844. Achille is the son of Federico Demetrio Zavatta and Emma di Tomarelli, both of whom have circus backgrounds. Federico organized his own traveling circus in Italy starting in 1903, and 10 years later, in 1913, he embarked for Tunisia. His marquee was only a modest umbrella, hosting a number of acts including a juggler, a musical clown, and other traditional circus artists. But of course, if you know your world history, you'll know that World War I happened soon after they set up in Tunisia. Federico, along with his two eldest sons, Riccardo and Luigi, who were Italian citizens, were drafted to fight the Austro-Hungarian Empire while Federico's wife stayed and ran a shooting range. When they returned from the war, the circus resumed in full swing. Federico's children became more involved with the show, including little Achille, who was only an infant at this time. He began his circus career at the age of 3, standing at the barrier dressed as Augustus, his clown persona. Achille joined with his older brother Riccardo, also named Michael, the eldest son of Federico who went to war, and Rodolfo, also known as Rolf, the second youngest son, to form Le Trio Fortunello, and he performed equestrian tricks alongside his elder sister Eleonora, also known as Titan. The Zavattas were largely successful, expanding their marquee to a 28-meter diameter double-masted tent in 1924. The family decided to move their circus into Morocco in 1925, which ended up being a little bit of a mistake, as a large part of Morocco was engaged in the Rif War. The Rif War was a conflict from 1921 to 1926 between the occupying colonists of Spain, later joined in by France, and the Berber tribes of the mountainous Rif region in northern Morocco. The family's hardship continued in 1926 when they moved from Morocco to Algeria. Algeria ended up suffering a great drought during this time, and so a year later in 1927, the family decided to get out of North Africa altogether and move to France. And ever since then, the family ran their show in Europe. From the 1930s to the 1950s, Achille continued to perform in circuses, films, and other artistic ventures, directing circuses, signing on with various shows, and appearing on some television shows as well. Of course, the Second World War put a pause on his circus work, but he picked it up right after the war ended. From 1947 to 1951, he directed the Bostock Circus and the Zoo Circus, which were two large marquees. In 1953, Achille's father had died, and 2 years later, in 1955, his mother died. But after the death of his parents, Achille continued to perform in films, TV shows, radio broadcasts, and other circus shows. And it was in 1962 that the Eurovision Song Contest was held in Luxembourg, and the broadcaster approached Achille to be the interval act for the contest. Over the years, Achille had developed his skills at the circus as a pantomime, which is a person who acts out a story without speaking but can use sounds. This separates it from silent comedy, which uses no words and sounds. For those of you who are familiar with British comedy, you might be aware of the work of either Charlie Chaplin or Mr. Bean. If you know either of those two gentlemen, then you'll know exactly what to expect from Achille on the Eurovision stage. And if you would like to watch the performance for yourself, I'll leave a link to the interval act in the show notes on our website, esc101podcast.wordpress.com. Achille enters the Eurovision stage without any clown makeup or costume, appearing simply in a suit and bow tie, which, while unusually doesn't follow his standard routine and style choice in his performances, is a welcome choice for the Eurovision stage. Having clown costuming and makeup probably would not have worked for this particular performance, especially given it being the early 60s, and the Eurovision Song Contest is very much still a formal affair. I think this was a welcome choice in terms of fashion. I know there's a few people who aren't fans of clowns. I'm not particularly fearful of clowns, but it's not a choice that I would make in terms of my entertainment. After the final song of the evening was sung, the host tells the audience that there will be a few minutes before the votes are ready to be announced. Achille then enters the stage from behind, tripping down the stairs and falling flat on his face. He gets up quickly and shows off a scorecard with song number 17 to represent a fictional country called Zavattaland, named after his family's name. He tries to post the card onto the scoreboard as if it was a last-minute entry into the Eurovision Song Contest, and the host, who's playing along, asks him what he is doing.
Qu'est-ce que vous faites là?
Pas tout de suite.
Ah, ben, ah, demain.
Vous êtes sourd? Vous êtes muet?
Ah, donc venez.
Mais alors vous ne chantez pas? Il n'y a que des chanteurs ici.
And seeing what he's doing, the host directs him to the microphone to perform his song. But rather than singing a song, he decides to impress everyone with his musical ability, going into the orchestra pit and inspecting various instruments to see which one he wants to use. He ends up choosing the clarinet. He inspects the clarinet by trying to use it as a pirate's telescope, and then he proceeds to play with the orchestra, but he quickly loses interest and begins to dance around the stage with the clarinet, brandishing it like a weapon held by a marching soldier, skipping along like he's riding a horse, and doing some all-around amusing legwork. The host simply stands in a corner, bemused by the spectacle before her, nodding some acknowledgement each time he goes by her. He then returns to playing the clarinet quite well, actually, expelling quite a bit of energy as he does so. Once he finishes playing, he feigns a dry mouth, resorting to sucking on the end of the clarinet like a popsicle, and discovers he actually enjoys the taste of a clarinet. However, he seemed to like it a little bit too much as he ends up swallowing the mouthpiece, and the sounds that he tries to make from his mouth sounds like a little bit of a squeak. He gives himself the Heimlich and spits out the mouthpiece. Having been fed up with the clarinet, he simply places it in the giant flower pot next to him. He motions for the host to join him as he tries to impress her with his handheld whistle. He plays his handheld instrument for a while, and once he finishes, he goes back into the orchestra pit once more and fights with a trumpet player for his instrument, but not before pausing for a moment to acknowledge one of the female string players. He forces the trumpet out of the player's hand and then proceeds to play it rather skillfully. Partway into his performance, the sound becomes muffled, and he tries to figure out exactly why that is. He sticks his finger in the mouthpiece, hoping to clear it out, but it gets trapped, like in one of those Chinese finger trap puzzles. He eventually frees his finger, but gets another finger stuck in the process. This kind of reminds me of the Mr. Bean sketch, where he has a piece of paper stuck to his hand, and so he uses the other hand to take it off. But then it gets stuck to that hand. He resorts to using his foot, his legs, all these sorts of things. And it's a very similar performance. He does go back and forth, but eventually two gentlemen emerge from backstage acting like security and literally drag Achille off the stage. He never returns to the stage to take a bow, and we don't see him ever again. Honestly, for 1962, this interval act was really entertaining and quite hilarious. It was the early days of the Eurovision Song Contest, so it's not the fireworks and the concerts that we know of today, but rather something that was a bit of a simplistic affair. And especially something that was given so animated, it was refreshing and wonderful to see. At this point, the interval acts of the Eurovision Song Contest were quite simplistic affairs, either orchestral pieces or interval acts that we didn't get to see in 1956 because it wasn't filmed. To me, seeing this interval act really was a groundbreaking moment in the Eurovision Song Contest. It shows what people could do on the Eurovision stage in an active way. Rather than just standing around and singing in a microphone, movement was really possible. The cameraman did his best to follow Achille along and to keep track of his movements. I couldn't imagine being the camera operator in 1962, but what I saw on the camera was quite hilarious and definitely entertained me during the voting process, so very well done to Achille. After his Eurovision performance in the 1960s and 70s, Achille continued to star in various films and circus acts. And in 1978, he decided it was time to create his own circus show. It started out modestly, but with his family experience, he went up against some of the bigger names and it quickly grew. However, his circus show started to decline in 1985 when Achille started suffering from health problems. And due to his health, he stepped down from performances, instead renting out his tent to focus on directing the show instead. The circus continued to decline in the late 1980s, with a fire damaging many of the vehicles used in the circus show and financial hardships taking place. In December 1990, he ran his last big show called Viva Zavata, Viva Mexico. During the summer tour of 1991, Achille's circus went into bankruptcy, and he resigned himself to sell his circus to a real estate agent, who just simply ran it into the ground, holding a catastrophic tour in 1992 before going bankrupt again. The remaining assets were sold in 1993 to the CEO of Pinder Circus, Gilbert Edelstein. During his life, Achille did get married a few times and he had children, and those children decided to take up Achille's legacy running circuses in his honor. And today there's actually a Zavata brand which has become a registered trademark. There have been problems with copycats trying to profit off the family name, but the family lawyer stays on the hunt for lookalikes. Today, the Zavata family circus performs in France under the name of Nouveau Cirque Zavata. It consists of a two-hour show with lights, projectors, and other classic circus elements like acrobats, performances, and even some cotton candy. It does, however, contain live animal acts, which means that countries like the UK that have legislation like the Animal Welfare Act prevents the circus from performing in those areas, but it does remain a top show in France. Unfortunately, Achille was not able to see the fruits of his children's labors. Shortly after selling the circus to the real estate agent in 1992, Achille's health declined even further, suffering from a kidney disease. He was placed on dialysis, but unable to live with the pain that he suffered with, he ended his own life on November 16, 1993, at the age of 78. His body rests at the Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris. Achille ended up getting married three times. His first marriage was in 1934 with Julia Moore, an acrobat he met during one of the circuses he was recruited to. He had three children with her, Lydia in 1938, William in 1940, and Willie in 1943. And he also had three grandchildren, Sebastian, Warren, and Stephanie. His grandson Warren ended up creating a show about his childhood and the difficult relationship he had with Achille. His marriage to Julia ended in divorce in 1955. 2 years later, in 1957, he married a second time to Monique Reneves, also known as Mona Sylvie, who was an actress he worked with in the film Du sang sous le chapiteau, Blood on the Marquis. He had a son named Eric in 1969. It's not known what's happened to the second marriage. In 1974, he married a third time to Annick Tretou, a lawyer who was the sister of a friend he met through a New Year's Eve party the year before in 1973. They had one son together, Frank, in 1975, and Annick is believed to still be alive to this day. That is the story of an Italian clown and his intergenerational family of circus performers going back 200 years. This is the biggest reason why I launched this podcast, so I could talk about stories like this, about the people that are often forgotten about in Eurovision circles. It feels random talking about a 200-year-old circus family on a Eurovision podcast, but that tiny blip in Achille's life allowed his story to be told on this podcast. And I want to explore more stories like this, along with so many other fascinating facts and figures about the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the decades. Now, let's take a breather from all that history and take a look at what's been happening in Eurovision news. It's time for the Eurovision Report. Loreen, the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest in 2012 and 2023, has joined Tap Music, the record label that collaborated with the BBC to select their Eurovision entry in 2022 and 2023. This comes after Tap Music ended their collaboration with the BBC. The company works with artists like Dua Lipa, Lana Del Rey, and Ellie Goulding. It'll be interesting to see how Loreen's career develops with this new partnership. This was reported by Sanjay Giandani of ESC Today. This has been the Eurovision Report. And now it's time to learn about this week's Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I take a look at a Eurovision entry that I find interesting, fascinating, enjoyable, sometimes cringy or terrible. This week is a little bit of a confession of mine because it is a guilty pleasure for me to listen to. Let's find out which Eurovision entry is this week's Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the entry for Luxembourg in 1977, Frère Jacques, translated as Brother John, sung by Anne-Marie Bess. Composers and lyricists Pierre Coeur and Guy Berg, conductor Johnny Arthy. It placed 16th, getting only 17 points, 8 points from Finland, 7 points from Spain, and 2 points from Ireland. For those of you who might be familiar with Frère Jacques, the old nursery rhyme, and I don't know if there's any relation to the old nursery rhyme, but there certainly is a element of Frère Jacques, especially when it talks about Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, This song is one of my guilty pleasure songs. I listen to this on repeat, and I absolutely love the rhythm. The orchestra with the brass section brings real life to this song. And I don't know if the camera operator was fading in and out on purpose, like it showed in the performance, but I felt there was confusion as to where to put the camera. I listened to some of the talk back that's been posted on YouTube, and there's quite a lot of shouting and a lot of miscoordination, it sounds like. So I don't know if the camera operator was doing that kind of stuff on purpose or if they were just trying to figure it out. But it seemed like a little bit of a hot mess fading in and out with the way that the camera angles worked. I don't know if he was trying to figure out whether to show the singer or the backing singers or the stage as a whole, but it kept on changing throughout the performance, which didn't really make much sense. And the outfit she's wearing looks like a nightgown. Why am I seeing so many nightgowns on the Eurovision stage in the 70s is beyond me. Perhaps it's appropriate for this song, considering it's all Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, which means, you know, Brother John, are you sleeping? The song talks about her growing up from her childhood experience to an adult experience. And when I say adult experience, I mean having to put up with the unwanted attention of men. She has a lover, as she mentions in the song, but there are also several men that are vying for her attention. And some of the lyrics translated from the Diggleu Thrush website by Daniel Sabot really shed some light as to the experience that she's having. So here are some of the lyrics of the song translated from French into English. Peter, I'm scared. Harry, I laugh. Pablo, Tino, Pedro, zero. Simon, oh no. William, what a drama. I shout, I bite, and you sleep. Harold passes very close to me, and Pierre tightens me. Eric, Patrick, it's the panic. Brother John, save me. So clearly these men, you know, Peter scares her. Harry, she laughs at, not in a good way, but kind of a pathetic kind of laugh. Not in the song, but metaphorically, she would be laughing at Harry. Pablo, Tino, Pedro, they would get zeros in her mind, so probably not attractive in the slightest. Simon, oh no, just that dread of having to deal with Simon constantly vying for her attention. William's full of drama, Harold passes a little bit too close, and Pierre makes her feel tightened. Eric, Patrick, she's panicking about, and she turns to her lover, Brother John, to save her. I feel like pretty much any woman in the 21st century can relate to this song, having to put up with unwanted advancements of men who push themselves onto women in ways that are scary and just downright intrusive. I'm a man, so I can't really speak about the experiences of women who have to put up with men who are really pushy and just kind of really in your face when it comes to trying to date and get into relationships with women. And while I can't praise the fashion choices of either Anne-Marie or her backing singers, and I also have to question the competency of the camera operator, this song is a little bop, and it also, I think, has a good message. I think it's telling women to be mindful of the men that you're around and to be careful with the circle of friends that you keep. Of course, be open-minded and interested in the men that you do meet and to, you know, have conversations and develop relationships, but know your boundaries. If a man is pushing themselves onto you too much, tell them. And if they don't get the hint, then take the steps you need to get away from them. And so for those reasons and many more, that song gets Song of the Week. Looking back at the Interval Act of 1962, it's fascinating to see just how much you can learn from a single Interval Act. What started out as watching an Interval Act performance turned into learning about one of Europe's most famous circuses, which hold its roots in a family that has been putting on circus acts for over 200 years. Thank you so much for sticking with me and learning about this fascinating story. If you would like to share your thoughts, your comments, or your suggestions, you can get in touch with us on Instagram at ESC101podcast. You can send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. And be sure to check out our website for the show notes. Be sure to also subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening so that you don't miss out on any future episodes. Give us a review or a rating if you haven't done so already, and make sure to share the show with your fellow Eurovision fans. Next week, we are diving into the life of one of Eurovision's most well-known artists, so stay tuned to find out who we'll be looking at. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.